This is William Schultz. Today's date is June 14th, 1973. The time is 2 p.m. I will be interviewing the Reverend Fred Bickel, Pastor Emeritus of St. John's Lutheran Church of Amolith, Michigan. Topics to be discussed fall under the category of a clergyman's recollections of life in Amolith, Michigan from 1926 onward. In these reminiscences are items which can be classified under four broad areas: religion, economics, education, and social life. This afternoon we're interviewing the Reverend Fred Bickel, Pastor Emeritus of St. John's Lutheran Church of Amolith. Pastor Bickel, you know that this oral interview that we're doing is in connection with a class on Michigan history at Saginaw Valley College. Your name particularly came up because I know you personally, and I know that you are involved in a great extent even today in much of the work of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in this area. For the past 40-some years, you've been the pastor here at St. John's Lutheran Church of Amolith, and I know you've been involved in Lutheran work not only in Bay City and Saginaw, but probably other areas of the country. And I'm sure that our listeners would like to know something of your own personal background. Perhaps, Pastor Bickel, you can tell us, when were you born?
I was born in 1890 in Frankenmuth.
In Frankenmuth, Michigan. Apparently, then, with the name Bickel, you must be associated with some of the Franconians who originally settled in that area. Is there some connection with the Franconians of famous Frankenmuth?
Definitely. My grandfather, from my mother's side, Mr. Lazel, was the first one of the Franconians to come with Pastor Lay, or was sent by Pastor Lay, and Pastor Kramer, then, was the pastor of Frankenmuth. Mm-hmm. And he helped with the Indian mission in its early stages.
I see.
Yes.
What brought your grandfather, was it, did you say? What brought your grandfather to this area?
And really to do mission work among the Indians, and he was ready to leave Germany for conscience sake because he could not have freedom of religion as he felt Christians should have.
Should have at that time.
Yes.
Yes. I just wonder then, perhaps you can explain to us, Amolith stands out here a little bit in the country right now between Saginaw and Bay City. We also know that the Franconians were quite instrumental in establishing a lot of Lutheran congregations. We think of Frankenmuth itself and Frankentrost and some of the other areas. Was the congregation here at Amolith in any way started by these adventuresome early Franconians who came here?
Was started by Pastor Severs, who was the pastor of the Frankenmuth congregation and served Amolith for a number of years, and later on a permanent pastor by the name of A.G. Miller was called, who was here 33 years, and then was followed by Pastor Schinnerer, who was the president of the Michigan District of the Missouri Synod, who was here 26 years, and then it was my privilege to be pastor of this congregation for 37 years.
37 years. So, yeah. What was the date of your arrival here at Amolith?
That was the 13th of January, 1926.
1926.
Yes.
Yes. So, was the congregation here then established 100 and some years ago by the Franconians?
Correct. Two teachers, and later on, as the congregation grew, we added two more teachers. We now have four teachers.
I see.
In the faculty
of the church. Yes, I think it was mentioned by yourself previous that the township, or the name Amolith, really has a very important connection with the congregation here. Could you tell us a little bit about the name Amolith and how it's referred to?
Amolith was a little country place in Germany, and Mr. Kopp, who owned a factory, was going to send his men over here after his factory failed, but this did not pan out, and so a number of other people from Germany located here in this community and eventually then established a church.
Hmm. This Mr. Koch, is
Koch.
He? Koch, I'm sorry. Is there any connection with his name in the present Lubitschew or area that's called Kochville?
At one time, this was a complete township, 6 miles long, 6 miles wide, and then Saginaw Bay County had a controversy with regard to the closeness, I would say, of the Bay City, so it was divided into Frankenlust and Kochville, Saginaw County, which is south of here.
About how long ago was that? Was that before your time here?
Oh, well, this was before my time.
It was.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
This was soon after Frankenlust was established down here, and then they had this controversy. That I wouldn't know. I wish I'd have that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, we'd also be interested to know a little bit about your background, Pastor Bickel. Where did you attend school?
I attended Roker School in Frankenmuth. First 8 grades, and then I went to Fort Wayne, Indiana, Concordia College for 6 years, and then I went to St. Louis Seminary, attended 3 years, and then I had a call to Maple Grove, Michigan. I served in Maple Grove for 4 years and was called to Bertrand, and served in Bertrand and taught parochial school my first 12 years in the ministry. Besides serving 3 congregations, which was Bertrand, Maple Grove, and Venice.
Sounds like you were a busy man at that time.
Venice had a little log church. It was a congregation that was abandoned by another district. And finally, I served it for a number of years, let's see, every 3 Sundays. But there were no children, but in Maple Grove, I would always serve on Saturday and teach Sunday school, or Saturday school, as they called it at that time, besides my parochial school at Bertrand during the week.
Wow. That sounds like you were busy every day.
Well, we kept at it.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Surely you must have probably some fond memories of the area of Amalith, and maybe sometimes not so fond memories. I'm kind of curious to find out if, when you began your service here at Amalith in 1926, was it?
26.
If, as you think back now, what your impressions were of the times and the people who were living here at, you know, in 1926. I'm particularly kind of interested to find out, what did people do for a living here in this area?
95% of the members were farmers, and they were somewhat clannish. Due to the fact it was the horse and buggy age, and so they didn't get to mingle much with other people. So they were for themselves, but they were people who went to church on Sunday and took for granted that this had to be part of their life. Mm-hmm. And they were good people, mm-hmm. although maybe I should mention this, some of them were given quite a number of bachelors. We had 33 bachelors in the congregation.
You did.
31 old maids didn't get out, mm-hmm. and so this percentage, we had perhaps the second largest percentage-wise voting members in the Missouri Senate at the time.
Really? About how many people would that have been?
We had 400 communicants, and we had 189 voting members.
Wow, that's a very large percentage then, isn't it?
This was a very large percentage.
Yes. Now, the voting members are those people in the church that... What were their responsibilities? What would be a voting member of your church?
At the time, we had 190 voting members, as mentioned before, mm-hmm. and they were interested in that church. A large number, of course, were bachelors.
Mm-hmm.
And we had families, church-going families, who took for granted that it had to be in church on Sunday, so we had a very fine attendance. Perhaps not as good as it should be.
Voting members of your church, did this include women, or was this strictly something that was
only
for the men?
Even to this very day, we do not include women, although they have their say-so.
Mm-hmm.
We have the ladies' aid societies that support the church in various ways. They're very much interested.
Mm-hmm.
It's the old established way of conducting business, men take over.
I see. So the voting members are those men particularly responsible with administrating the church, I would imagine. Right, yeah. And back in 1926, the majority of your members were farmers then, huh?
They were 95% were farmers.
Right. What did the other 5% do?
Well, they were masons, and we had a few. So we had two stores, and we had a number of carpenters. But 95% were strictly farmers.
What kind of farming did these people do? Was it dairy farming or crop farming or what particular?
Both. Dairy farming and crop farming. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a variety because they relied upon wheat, oats, hay, and beans, corn, beets.
In 1926, were most of the farmers, let's say, growing things mainly for themselves and their own family's support, or were they already at that time making, making, let's say, money off of their farms? That is, they began to specialize in certain things.
Well, the farmers here in Amalith were always very conservative, and one thing I should mention, they held on to their money.
Did they, huh?
And so they supported their church, and they supported, they paid their taxes on time, and they were really an asset to the country because of their Christian attitude over against their church and country.
These farmers, oftentimes we hear about, even in today's, you know, today's world, that farmers generally have a rather difficult time in making ends meet. Was that pretty much true of farming at that time also? Were farmers pretty much, shall we say, call them poor, or would we classify them as being kind of average as far as their income was concerned, or were there some rich ones also?
The farmers here in Amalith were people that went to work early, and they made the grade. They were not any poor people, with the exception of a few that were on the sick list, but outside of that, they made hay while the sun was shining.
They did, huh? They were pretty industrious people there.
They were very industrious people, almost 100%. Mm-hmm. You can tell that in the community even today. Mm-hmm. And now they have smaller farms, and they work in some factory or some other occupation, and so they really have dual income.
So today it's more or less people are part-time farmers, and whereas years ago they were
only about 15%. The rest are fully employed in some other occupation.
Yeah. So in the 40-some years that you've been here, you've noticed probably, shall we say it, change around. People are probably have left the farm and left behind. They went to industry then also to supplement their income.
And they built their homes due to the auto. They could get to their place of occupation to work. They remained here in Amalith, at least a large percentage.
I believe it was with the introduction of the automobile that I suppose life really began to change, even for the farmer, huh?
This is correct.
Is there some way that you can remember particularly that this may have changed the farmer's way of life?
It surely did, because of this fact that the farmer now retained their farm and did away with their cattle and dairy farming, and were strictly farming. We have raising beans and beets, and at the same time, in winter, they would work in the sugar factory.
Oh, yes.
In my early ministry already, many have worked in winter because their time was not demanded on the farm in such a proportion as in summer.
I suppose with the introduction of the automobile, I suppose the farmer found some kind of labor-saving device just by having a car.
Yeah. Correct. Also with regard to when I came, they were still farming with horses.
They were.
And today they have tractors, and machinery has taken over. I doubt whether there's one horse left
in the whole area. Surely.
Yes.
When we think back as to the industrious farmer, the man you said who worked from the time he got up until the time he went to bed. I wonder, did people have any kinds of leisure activities that they engaged in at that time?
Very little, outside of taking it a little easier in winter, because a certain percentage did not work in any factory.
Mm-hmm.
This was in my early ministry. But later on, they also thought of making money like everybody else did, and so they had a dual capacity and so far that they worked on the farm and worked in the factory or some other place.
So basically the people didn't have much leisure time then, apparently.
Not the German farmer.
Not the German farmer, huh? Yeah. What about the youth at that time? What did the young people do? Were they basically father's helper on the farm? And
this was almost a foregone conclusion. Mm-hmm. And the boys would take over, and the father would look around whether he could buy a farm. But this changed as times went on, as they could get away with the cars and get to town. They took up other occupations.
Mm-hmm.
And today, there are very few that think of taking up farming, because their future seems to be
We often hear about the times when the church was not only, should we say, instrumental as far as the creation and the sustaining of faith in people's hearts, but that churches also played probably a pretty significant social function also, probably with the creation of young people's societies and ladies' aid societies. Was the church here at Amelith involved in this at all, and what were some of the things that the church did just so that people could have a social, help fill in their social and leisure hours, those few that they didn't find themselves spending on the farm?
At the beginning of my ministry here in Amelith, it was strictly church, no societies of any kind.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. And then we started the Ladies' Aid, we started the Young People's Society, we started the Mission Society, and today we're almost over-organized.
Almost over-organized, huh? In what way do you mean?
Well, because we have at least seven different organizations.
Just within your own church here.
There's a time when a person must realize that the evenings are still meant largely for the family.
Mm-hmm.
And these, of course, they not only belong to the different societies, they also take in other, like bowling and so forth.
Right.
Basketball.
So all of a sudden we find that the lives of people today are still probably just as much packed with many things like they were back then.
Right.
I suppose, go ahead.
I was going to say that our Young People's Society with able teachers leading them are really an asset to the congregation, future building of the congregation. As I see it now, looking in from the outside.
Sure, surely, right.
Where I no longer have the problems and the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a member and very much interested in their welfare.
Right. Yeah. How would you characterize the religious life of people probably in 1926? And is it any different then? People often say, well, give me the good old days. Looking back nostalgically, I suppose, at those times, I suppose people in the church would also have a tendency to say, well, years ago it was a lot better than it is today. Do you think there's any truth to that statement? Was it better back then as compared to today, as far as, let's say, the religious life of people is concerned?
Well, at the time of my early ministry, the people were, as we say in German, sesshaft.
Sesshaft.
They remained on their farm. They didn't communicate too much. But in later life, as the world moved in and our people moved out, their communication with the world became more involved. And today, we have the same problems that congregations have in the city or in the smaller towns, because our people also have cottages up north. They, during the summer, they go north. In winter, they go with their snowmobiles. Quite a number of our people own snowmobiles.
Yeah.
So the religious life is competitive.
Is it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. More so than it was in the early ministry.
Mm-hmm.
although there's an advantage again in that, I would say, that mm-hmm. the people know how to meet the temptations.
Mm-hmm.
It was better in the early ministry.
Today.
Yeah.
One of the things that I know you mentioned to me was that in your ministry, not particularly in this area, but particularly in Birch Run, although you mentioned also in this area they were felt, that you had some dealings with the Ku Klux Klan. Usually these people are associated with the South, and I never realized that they were at all active up here. I know you related an interesting story about them. Maybe you could tell our listeners again what that was.
Well, I had one member in Birch Run who was somewhat of a weakling. I had his children in my school, and so I kept dealing with him and tried to win him for the church, because I had one of his children for the church, and he was given to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he joined the Ku Klux Klan. Shortly before he died, he asked me to remember him in my prayers, because he was facing eternity, and that he would renounce the Ku Klux Klan. But they were bound to call him a member in spite of his denial and the wish that mm-hmm. he would dissolve no longer to be a member. So finally the Lord took him, and then I had the service, first in the house where they were trying to take over, and I finally gave the ultimatum, and I told them that I would not officiate as soon as they would start.
Mm-hmm.
So they refrained from further service. And we went to church, and they took their cross made of red roses, and also the name KKK placed on the cross. They took it into church, because I told the elders, as long as I have the last word, they did not make any commotion, this would be permissible. But in spite of one lady made quite a commotion after the service,
mm-hmm.
and we went to the cemetery, and there, after we had a prayer, a strong wind came up, and the cross
kept
blowing
had
placed next to me would not stand up. But all in all, it was quite an experience that we had with the Ku Klux Klan, because they were strong from the one town in this mm-hmm. whole community, and they also owned a building in Saginaw, but after some time they failed and they left this community.
Mm-hmm. Originally, we always think of the Ku Klux Klan as far as, you know, antagonism concerning
yes.
the black race is concerned. Were there many black people living in Birch Run, or why do you think the Ku Klux Klan was so active?
Well, they were going to get started here in the state of Michigan, and they picked out Birch Run because we had a number of people in Birch Run who were not connected with any church, who
mm-hmm.
were ready to start a commotion, I imagine.
Yeah.
And so they joined, and they thought they'd get a foothold,
mm-hmm.
and gathered money. Some of our members, a few of our
mm-hmm.
weak members, they joined and paid their $10, and after a while I asked them just
mm-hmm.
what they got, and for their $10 they said nothing.
So it was kind of more like a rabble-rousing group
this,
at that
this
time.
Was,
huh?
Just a bunch of
encounters. Yeah. And they were active here even though that there wasn't any large percentage of black people living here then at that time?
Very few. And this was not they just want to get a foothold, as far as I know, as far as I recall today, because they have nothing to do with the black people.
Were there black people living in this area at all, though?
No, they were in Saginaw.
In Saginaw?
Yes.
Primarily connected with working in the industries, I suppose, at that time. Huh?
Yes, there were a few black people, but very small in number, as far as I recall. It's only in late years that they have multiplied to such a degree where they're really causing some trouble in Saginaw because of the stealing that is going on and the dope that is being sold among them.
Mm-hmm. I know when we think back, well, some of the people that I've talked to that live in Pinconning, they often refer to the times when, well, we were talking about the Ku Klux Klan and their antagonism over against black people.
Yes.
Some of the people that I've known and been conning have often mentioned, as they think back years ago, that there was antagonism even between Lutherans and Catholics, and probably vice versa. Was that true of this area too, or was it somewhat different?
As far as I know, there was no animosity shown. Mm-hmm. Also, on the other hand, I would say there was no love lost either.
There wasn't.
There seemed to be a wall between the Lutherans and the Catholics. They didn't communicate. They went their way, and the Lutherans, they quiet people were clannish. Mm-hmm. They did not associate like they do today.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of the people that I call in the hospital, they're acquainted with people, and they tell of the mm-hmm. dealings that they have with others, mm-hmm. which was not the case.
It wasn't the case then.
When I went around here in Amalek, I was Pope.
You were Pope, huh?
Well, what I mean, they took my word.
Oh, I see.
And therefore, it's of such great importance that a person goes the right way,
mm-hmm.
and because look where I eventually would have led the people in my head.
Right.
Yeah, it was a conscious matter. Mm-hmm. A person felt it too. If he would mislead the people, what a responsibility. Yes.
So, at that time, a clergyman in the area was probably regarded with. People looked at him for a lot of authority. Do you find that's true today?
This is true. They respect the ministry mm-hmm. in this community, and this is largely due to the fact that the grandparents respect the ministry. They respect the word, mm-hmm. and though there are exceptions, there always were exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Sin always will be in the world, and at that time it was this weakness of drink mm-hmm. today. Possibly it's the money. Making inroads that people get to be more independent, but we have a church, still a church called people.
Mm-hmm, you do.
In the meeting Monday, the expressions on the part of our young people mm-hmm. did a person's heart good.
So that probably this area finds clergymen, well, still has some, let's say, traditions, respect and so on for clergymen. Whereas probably other areas of our nation, this is not so much the case anymore.
You know, I have my six boys that are in the ministry work among mm-hmm. different people, and every once in a while they make the expression and say, "Dad, you don't know what you
mean." In what way? What do they mean?
That the people are church-minded, and that they do not like Ottawa, Prince of Painesville, has to make calls. Herman over in London, Ontario, he has possibly 40% of Latvians, Estonians, and mm-hmm. Lithuanians, Polish, and German, and Russians, mm-hmm. Who are not church-minded, constantly have to be encouraged to come to church after they're confirmed. They see now we are confirmed for life.
Yeah, right.
Yes, this is not true of our young people go to church, and they're members of the youth society, and they work for the church. I must say, it does a person's heart good to see this activity.
So you'd feel that probably today parental guidance is still great, has a great deal to do with family life and living in their faith and so on, probably carried over from their fathers and their grandfathers and so on. So that the family life among the German people must have been pretty important.
At the present time, I'm reading the Roman history, the Persian history, Syria, and how the emperors in that day and age were the power. They could dictate, and this tied it over for almost centuries.
Mm-hmm.
About three, 4 centuries, where it did not change. And this is true of this community because of the grandparents and the parents. And the children seem to follow the footsteps, with an exception here and there, of course, all in all. And gradually, we're getting divorces, first ever.